Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Lit Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Thea. In this episode, we are joined by Giles Watkins to talk about the second edition of his title, The Positive Sleep Book, a holistic approach to resolve sleep issues and transform your life. In the new and updated edition of this enormously popular book, Giles shares the techniques and personal tips that transformed his life and helped him sleep better. Along the way, he explains the importance and function of sleep and how the lack of it typically affects professionals. The book also examines how organizations can promote better sleep. Giles is an author, coach, speaker, and the founder of Positive Sleep. He has over 35 years of global business and general management experience in enabling leaders to solve problems, achieve balance, deliver superior results, and sleep better at night. Hello, Giles. It's a great pleasure to have you with us on Lit Radio Podcast. So the reason for you being here with us today is the new edition of your book, The Positive Sleep Book. So before we start talking about that, could you tell us when did you get so passionate about the topic of sleep?
Well, thanks, Thea, and thanks for inviting me on. It's good to be back. I remember doing a podcast with yourselves 5 years ago, so it's lovely to reconnect with the new edition. Yes, originally I started having sleep problems in around 2002. There was a trigger event where I basically thought I was going to lose my then fiance thought I was going to lose my job. And actually it was just a reorganization, but it was quite a stressful time. And I guess her stress in a way translated to me, and I started to have sleep problems from then for about a dozen years. And towards the end of that time, I was doing a master's at INSEAD, the business school, or a change management master's. I had to do a thesis on the subject of something I wanted to change, and I chose my sleep problem. And through study and practice, I managed to overcome the challenges I had. That then led me to becoming quite passionate about it, because it would come up in conversation with friends and family, and I would talk about it, which then led to a number of people inviting me to do short talks at business breakfasts and evening meetings and so forth about it. And then someone from a fellow author, Ben Renshaw, one of your authors that has also had books published via LID, suggested I might write a book about it. So it was a gradual process. And what I actually find, Ted, to be honest, is it's such a... I've learned so much about myself, then about sleep, and then there's always more to learn about sleep. So it's quite easy to stay passionate about it, because there's always new research coming out. It's still a relatively young science, and there's constantly things that we find out that seem to be right, and other things that we might have assumed for a decade or two that we found out aren't quite right. So it's easy to stay passionate about it.
Absolutely. And is that why you decided to write the book back in 2019, the first edition?
Yes. Ben suggested it actually in 2018. He said to me, I think based on the work you've done for your thesis, and based on the self-improvement, if you like, you've been able to bring about through your own study and work and obviously consulting with a lot of other people. There certainly is something in here, you know, your personal journey. Is of interest. So I'm the classic lived experienced author. You know, I'm not a neuroscientist or a psychologist or a medical doctor or anything. I'm someone who gathered the information he could and applied it as best he could, and has had reasonably good results, and so has become passionate about it in that way. And yeah, Ben convinced me, right, to be honest. He I said, don't be daft, and he said, no, I'm not daft, Jarv. I've written 8 books. So I think I know a book when I see it. So that's how it came about.
And it's a great book. But now we are publishing the new second edition. So could you tell our listeners what new contents they can expect to find in that new edition?
Well, there's a couple of main changes. One is I've introduced about a dozen new illustrations, partly to illustrate concepts that I think people were particularly interested in and perhaps weren't as easy to understand. You know, there's so many people like a visual representation of an idea. So, for example, bookending your night, or a quick reference guides on the benefits of naps, or some of the key things you'll suffer from if you, as a leader, if you don't sleep well, all those sorts of things. It gives you very quick references. And also, for me as a communicator, those new illustrations are very handy in terms of talks and other communications I do. So that was part of it. But in addition, I thought the world had moved on a bit, particularly in the area of post-COVID sleep, how COVID affected sleep and how it's still affecting some people in terms of disruption. And also, I wanted to write a bit about sleep and technology, both in terms of some ideas and sort of getting some, actually getting some second or third year undergraduates to look at sleep and technology for me and come up with their ideas, what we might be able to do and see how they felt about it. But also reflecting on how much technology can actually help us with sleep in the short term, and perhaps some of the more mainstream gadgets and my views on those are probably not quite so positive, and reminding people about some of the older techniques that you might call old technology that could be used. So those are the kind of themes that seemed worth writing about, and hence a new edition.
Definitely. But Charles, before we discuss some of the content in the book, could you please define what sleep is?
That's a great question. And the best definition I ever found was actually from Harvard Medical School, which is a very strong source of sleep education. And they define it as a phase of the day when activity drops right down compared to the rest of the 24 hours in a day. It's also associated typically with a habitual posture. So for us, that generally means closing our eyes and typically lying down. I mean, some people do it in a chair, but mostly it's lying down. Also, when we are asleep, we are not very reactive to external stimuli. So if someone prods us or pokes us, it takes quite a bit, quite often, to get us to wake up. And unlike hibernation or being in a coma, we can reverse the state quite easily. So we can literally wake up and be wide awake in a matter of seconds if we so choose, as it were. So it's a relatively easily reversible. So those are the key definitions. Obviously, different animals sleep in a slightly different way, and so forth. But that's kind of the definition for humans, if you like.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. I mean, we know sleep is a very important part of everyone's life, but I don't think I've ever heard a definition of sleep like that. So thanks for that, Charles. But yeah, as I mentioned, sleep is very important for all of us. But why do so many people, and especially leaders, struggle to get a good night's sleep?
There's sort of two answers to that question. One is that essentially to sleep well, you need to, it would seem that you need to quieten the mind and relax the body. And often one triggers the other. So if you can really relax the body, sometimes that helps you quieten the mind. Equally, if you can really just start to switch off, you'll relax, because often I find it more the second way around. It's the quieting the mind that must come first. The reality is that many leaders struggle to quieten their mind. Why do they do that? Because they have increasingly global jobs or jobs across different time zones, and because of the advent of personal computing, modern technology, mobile phones, etc. Work, it's very easy to have work in your pocket, as it were, and travel around with it. Great, that has many great advantages in terms of flexibility, but it also makes it very challenging to switch off. And some people never switch off, really. And that's one of the reasons why they have problems. The other answer, if you like, is, and if I was here with, my professor of neuroscience friends, as it were, they'd probably just say, we don't really know what it is. Why do they say that? Because from a scientific point of view, it is quite difficult to pinpoint, for example, why so many people have maintenance insomnia. The most common form of problems with sleep is that I can get to sleep fine, but I keep waking up at 3 a.m. Why is it? Now, some of us need to go to the loo at that time or whatever, but beyond that, what might be driving that sort of middle of the night wake up? Again, there's lots of theories, but there's little concrete. We can definitely tell you that X is happening. Kind of stuff. So, I think, as I said, from a practical and pragmatic point of view, it seems to be the quietening of the mind, the relaxing of the body issue. But beyond that, going a little bit deeper, it is quite challenging. So I suppose in many ways, some of the stuff I'm talking about is addressing the former, which is in some ways a little bit superficial, but it's certainly helped me and it's helped quite a lot of other people. So that's what we know and we can work on. Hopefully, and as the years progress, we'll start to get a better knowledge of why it is, for example, this 3 a.m. syndrome is so prevalent.
Absolutely. And just to pick on the first part of your answer about it's really difficult for leaders to calm their mind and to get in the right mind space to sleep. Based on your research, does that happen more often nowadays than it did, let's say, 100 years ago or even
Oh,
in the
yeah,
past?
definitely. From what I've seen, I mean, the suggestion is that we're sleeping, probably an hour to an 2 hours less than we were 50 years ago. That's research that I've read both in the US and in the UK, and probably is true of many of the other more industrialized nations. Now, why would that? What does that coincide with? It coincides with, the widespread use of television, having, greater wealth, people being able to go out more, stay up later and socialize more and do other things rather than just sort of work and exist. And then you add on to that in the last 20 plus 20 to 30 years, home computing and the use of mobile phone. I probably had my first laptop in the late 80s, so that's sort of 35 years ago, and I was able to work at 10 o'clock at night at home and upload things and send off reports and things like that, which I quite often did. And do that in real time rather than write it all out and take it the next day with someone to type it up, which we used to do before that. So that kind of thing just gives people greater freedom. But along with that, people have thought, oh, I've got into habits that have often kept them quite stimulated when they might be going to sleep, and or led to a philosophy around, well, I can cut corners on my sleep, maybe. And that's what a lot of people tend to do. And where you find a lot of sort of the conversation that I have around people wanting to sleep more often comes from a medical issue or burnout or something has happened. That has made them stop and take stock. And as part of the stock taking, sleep becomes a major conversation for many people.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I think that's very interesting. It really shows how our always on culture is impacting our sleep and our health overall. So, could you tell us what happens to us when we regularly don't sleep well or don't sleep enough?
Well, from a physiological aspect, there's lots and lots of things that happen in terms of challenges with our blood pressure, challenges with our heart, higher risk of cancer, all sorts of things. In fact, without wishing to sound too glib, when I first researched it, I came across two lists of ailments that typically could be linked back to poor sleep. Not always, but could be linked back. And I believe, if I remember right, the sort of European Medical Association list was about 75 ailments, and the American list was about 85 ailments. And when I looked at the two lists, a lot of it seemed to be just the way they were classified. So it's basically similar stuff, but with slightly different names and slightly different classifications depending on the continent you are looking at it in. And to my, I wouldn't say untrained, but non-medically qualified eye, I think my conclusion was just about everything. So it were most things that you could point to that would have some medical link back to poor sleep, as it were. But I guess where I've always focused, and the book is very much focused to people like I was 10 to 15 years ago who had a major sleep problem, who were in leadership roles. And I'm still in a leadership role in a sense, but at the time, running a business of multi-million dollar business with hundreds of clients and customers and staff. Some of the things that go out of the window when you don't sleep well as a leader, one is your ability to focus on results properly. And one of the reasons for that is some of the critical functions you need for focusing on results accurately are diminished dramatically. And someone managed to do a study once that showed that if you were over the limit for alcohol, that would be a bit similar to going into the office only having had, say, 4 hours sleep. And now we wouldn't deliberately go in the office over the limit for alcohol in a morning, but many of us, if we've had really poor sleep, are going in with that sort of capability in terms of focusing on results. And results orientation for me, one of the ways I always look at it is that ability as a leader to both look at the strategic and look at the minutiae. It's almost like the helicopter thing where you can both be at the stratospheric level, looking at the medium long-term plan and strategy required, and then if there's a fire, go straight down and look at the operational needs of that particular crisis. So that's one area that suffers badly. Another is solving problems effectively, because when we don't sleep well, we lose some of the capability around creativity and pattern recognition and general insight. And studies have shown that if you, the reverse is true, though. I mean, often all, like most of my book, Tear, I constantly try to put forward the positive. In other words, if you've been a bad sleeper and you improve it, are these things will improve? One of the areas being your ability to solve problems effectively. And so, for example, if you are a poor sleeper and you're working at home and you've got some particular problem solving you wish to do or detailed stuff you want to focus on, if you can nap, say early in the afternoon, post nap, there is for many people quite an improved chance they will be able to solve problems better. And often that's to do not just to creativity, but the ability to integrate things, integrate information to develop solutions, not just to come up with the ideas, but actually join the dots and make things happen. A third area that suffers badly, and this is one I know very strongly from personal experience, is around seeking different perspectives. In other words, you struggle to listen to others when you're tired. You struggle to really get the other person's point of view properly, and then also sort of take into account. And I mean, I've told the story many times of how I had a reflective thinker in my team in my days in Sri Lanka, and how he would often come in at the end of the management meeting and say, "I've got an idea about the thing we just agreed on 3 hours ago that might change our decision." And I'd sort of send him away with a flea in his ear saying, "We've made the decision," as opposed, because I was tired, very tired, as opposed to saying, "Okay, JJ, I know you're a reflective thinker. That's a great, you probably got a great point, which you normally had. Let's have a chat a bit about tomorrow and see if we need to revisit that action." So I think this is where the phrase sleeping on it actually is a good one for leaders. If you can, often it's either just write the email and go to bed and read it in the morning and see if it was really that important you needed to write it, or and then send it, or see if there's another way to go about things the next day. When you're well rested, you just seek, you're able to get that wider perspective. And that overlaps with the last thing that is really badly affected, which is your ability to support others. Because when you're really tired, you don't pick up non-verbal cues very well, you just don't comprehend them. So you get the what people are saying in words, but you don't get the true meaning, the full meaning, the non-verbals and so forth. And that's one of the reasons why I think there's so much money spent on some of the employee engagement initiatives in large corporates, because the leaders aren't sleeping properly, so they don't build rapport as well as they might, they don't listen as well as they might, they don't support as well as they might, and as a result, the engagement goes down. Whereas if you have a really well-rested leader, the chances are the engagement is much higher and they have a much better sense of how to support others. So if you're really tired and really stressed and really rushed, you don't make the time to say, or it's hard to take the time to say, Taya, how was your weekend? And mean it, not just how was your weekend, so you can move on 3 seconds later to the next thing, but listen to what you said about your weekend. Said, oh, yes, you told me that you were going to do that and that. How did that go? Because you were thinking that would be really interesting. And that would link to, just that genuine human interest. And if most of us can think back to bosses that could do that, I mean, in my 30-year career, I can, but sadly, it would be probably one in five, really could do it. It really, really would make that extra effort to have that extra little connection with you. And those were people that I'd be much more happy to go and share ideas with or open up to if I had a particular challenge or whatever. So I guess those are the areas that for me are particularly affected from a leadership perspective. But there's so many others from a physical angle, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really agree with your last point. But yeah, what you just said, it really shows how important sleep is for leaders to be actually effective in what they do. But some people, they might notice that their sleep changes as they get older. So, Giles, how does our sleep evolve through the different life phases? Does the amount of sleep that we need changes, or yeah, what can we expect as we grow older?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously in your childhood you do need more sleep. I'm not a child sleep expert, by the way, and if anyone wants to contact me, I do know child sleep experts that are really good at talking about that area and how the whole family can adapt to support a child that doesn't sleep so well. And I think it's a great area to work in. However, certainly if you're say sleeping 10 and a half hours as a sort of late 10, 12-year-old, then you get into your teens. You probably need similar sleep, but your sleep pattern for almost everyone, their circadian rhythm shifts. In other words, they want to get up later and go to sleep later. Unfortunately, the rest of the world doesn't shift, so you have this phenomena of teenagers not wanting to get out of bed in the morning, and parents getting very frustrated by that, and equally them wanting to stay up late when parents want to go to bed. And that is just a, it seems to be a natural phenomena that is not their fault or our fault, as it were, as parents now. It is just what happens to people, and that does shift. So there's a shift in the window in which you want to sleep. Which seems to shift back for most people in their 20s. As you get older, what happens? Well, certain things happen in the body that might make it more challenging to sleep. So, for example, your ability to process caffeine and alcohol, two examples. Alcohol is a sedative which will knock you out, but then when you wake up, you may not have had as deep a sleep as you would without the alcohol. And you'll feel dehydrated and so forth, and probably in a state that isn't great for good deep sleep. Caffeine is something that dampens out a chemical that is produced in the body called adenosine, which is part of the sleep pressure that builds up during the day. So if you have too much caffeine too late, then you reduce the sleep pressure that's there, and it can affect your time of sleep. Why do I mention those things? As you get older, processing those elements becomes more challenging, and so that can affect your sleep. But also, there's lots of other factors. I think just general lack of exercise for many people, particularly if they retire, not getting enough early morning sunlight, not actually exercising enough during the day, maybe having very long naps in the afternoon, like a couple of hours or something like that, which might start to disrupt their nighttime cycle, etc. There's all sorts of things that people, changes of habits that people can have that will affect their sleep. Because certainly, I think we probably do need maybe a little bit less sleep as we get over. There's our sort of 60s, 70s, 80s sort of classic retirement ages, or third phase, or whatever you care to call it. However, a fair bit of it is probably about the behaviors we adopt as well.
Yeah, those are great tips. Just one question that came to mind. You say some people may take really long naps in the afternoon. So how long should that be? Not so not to affect our night sleep.
Studies that have been done on naps tend to suggest that they fall into two categories. There's the sort of power nap, the quick nap. NASA famously looked at this and suggested it was 26 minutes back in the 60s. But generally, in the sort of 20-minute mark, the quick refresher, that as long as you take it before 3 p.m., that should do you no harm and probably do you a lot of good. Another type of nap then is the full sleep cycle, which tends to be 90 minutes. And that's why there's always this discussion around 7.5 to 8 hours sleep, which is approximately five times or five full sleep cycles. So I know myself, if I get a full sort of hour and a half on a Saturday or a Sunday or a Friday, if I'm just about to go out or I've been out late the previous night, sometimes I will really feel the need for a long sleep. Again, my yardstick is try to get up before 3 p.m. So try to have that sleep before then, even if it's late morning or early in the afternoon, because if you sleep too much later, it can sometimes affect your sleep cycle, and your ability to get to sleep then later on, or probably to wake up earlier or in the middle of the night or whatever. So I guess those that I'd be looking at the sort of 20 to 30 minute nap or the very long nap, or 90 minutes, as long as they're taken early enough, they shouldn't affect your sleep too badly.
Fascinating. Thanks for that. Well, in the book, you also discuss the impact our lifestyle has on our sleep. So, what can you tell us about that, and how does our lifestyle choices impact how well we sleep?
Yes, I mean, certainly when we eat would have quite a good, I certainly think for many people, it has quite a strong impact on their sleep and what we eat. For example, if we stay up late, working late on a habitual basis, and we're often working and preparing work, say, for example, very late at night, when we're a bit sleep deprived, that often leads to cravings for something to boost energy. Now, I don't normally see people stopping to, wok fry broccoli with oyster sauce at that point. I normally see people reaching for the chocolate hobnobs or phoning out for a pizza or taking in something that's carb heavy or sugar heavy or both or Mars bars or, all these are, all these things which are wonderful in small doses at the right time of day. But if you're taking them in late at night, they're much more like they just don't have the time to be processed. Or burnt off. So when you eat and what you eat certainly has an impact on your sleep. And that's something I addressed very much when I, as one of the things I looked at was to start to eat, make sure I ate earlier, but also to try to make sure I ate lighter in the evening. So for example, I hardly ever eat red meat at night because I noticed when I didn't, I slept better than when I did because it was certainly, I was finding that difficult to digest and that was affecting my sleep. So there's that aspect to lifestyle, if you like. The other aspect I choose is around sport, and certainly, if you are more active from a sporting point of view, you will typically sleep better. Why? That's obviously the physical angle, but also you're burning your stresses out, you're getting toxins out the system, and so forth. So that typically has a an impact as well, and I have definitely, I mean, personal view, I've aimed since I've been 50 and over and had the sleep problem, I've certainly upped my exercise, and that I'm sure is one of the reasons why I sleep better. So that's a major aspect. But I mean, the late and, in my view, much missed Dr. Michael Mosley, who I thought had lots of great ideas about sleep and very practical ones to communicate with people. He was not only a great advocate of exercise and eating, in these restricted windows and all sorts of stuff like that, but also getting out early morning and getting some sunlight, because of the impact of light, and through the iris, the receptors in the eye on your ability to sleep. And I certainly think that that's a big influence as well, how much light you're getting and when you're getting it and getting your light early in the morning. So those are just some of the elements of lifestyle that I touch on and that could potentially impact on improving your sleep.
Definitely. And at the beginning of our conversation, you mentioned that one of the new chapters in the book is about the impact COVID-19 had on our sleep and that it's still having some impact today. So could you tell us a little bit more about that?
I think the main piece really is to say that the number one tip, and I know we might talk about tips later on, and I'll repeat it probably, but the number one thing that helps people sleep well normally is some sort of pattern. The more we can get into a cycle of approximate same time going to bed and approximately the same time getting up within, say, half an hour or something like that, the better we will typically sleep. And COVID knocked that for six for most people. That was the problem, that most people suddenly were either working from home and sometimes getting up and going straight on the laptop to do early calls, and or didn't have the routine of driving to work or dropping off children or getting the bus or whatever it happened to be, the sort of things that people do on a regular basis. That went out of the window for several months for many people. And when they started, especially when they then sort of stopped homeschooling and started going back some of the time to work and sometimes working from home and floating flexibly, these are all wonderful get things. Again, flexibility and freedom is wonderful. However, it needs to be managed in terms of a routine around your sleep. So I think the loss of routine was the big challenge. And what I picked up, not just from surveys I read from various academic institutions, but also my own surveys that I would do when I was doing mostly Zoom calls or team calls on sleep with, clients at the time, was about two-thirds of people were sleeping differently, and one-third were sleeping very much the same. And of the two-thirds that slept differently, two-thirds were sleeping worse, and one-third was actually sleeping better. And when you talked about the ones sleeping better, they would talk about how they didn't up their exercise, or they managed to harvest that extra time they didn't have, like, through commuting anymore, and used it for, positive and better things. And the two-thirds were all talking about the challenges of the routine, the challenges of homeschooling, that all those sort of stresses and strains, the strain on relationship, the strain on sometimes finances caused by if you're a freelancer and you didn't get the support you were hoping for, et cetera, through those periods. And that combined with some of the sort of potential stresses like long COVID for some people, and the sort of mental health elements that have occurred through sort of some of the the isolation that people have felt through COVID, and struggled sometimes to reconnect and renew their social connections, community and groups and so forth. That's been a real thing, I think. So I definitely think we've entered a phase both which seems to be more challenging for sleep, and also where the consciousness of the problem has become far greater. So there is more noise about it. If you go back 10 years ago when I first started doing the thesis, you hardly ever saw an article in the paper about sleep. Today, probably almost every day, there'll be something on one of the main news channels or one of the major newspapers on either the printed or via the web. So there's been a dramatic shift in attention to the subject, and that has been partly amplified by what happened in COVID.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And while sleep is a very personal process and experience, what can companies do to promote better sleep for their employees?
Companies can, well, firstly, I think encourage people to talk about sleep and what are good habits for sleep, and actually get employees to treat it if they've got a problem with it, just like any other issue they might have a problem with, and actually be open about it. So I often think that a leader that's prepared to talk about their sleep issues and how they addressed it and solved it. I did a lunch and learn about 6 weeks ago in the City of London. And the CEO started talking about her challenges and how she bought a, in her case, she bought a device. She'd measured certain things and she'd actually made some adjustments. And then she's put the device down because she'd got the data she needed to help her make an informed decision on what she was going to do. Well, that was fantastic because people around were thinking, oh gosh, they really admire this person from what I could see in the culture. And she's been prepared to talk about a problem and what she did to address it. So stuff like that makes a huge difference. And understanding that there needs to be cut-off times. For most people, they do need to have an evening and a bit of time in the morning, or they'll benefit from it. And encouraging them to have it, and encouraging not to expect to always work every weekend, but actually it's okay to have weekends off or whatever. So a lot can be done to recognize that if we're always on, we will burn out and it will be bad for our sleep. Whereas if we're working to a rhythm more, and just occasionally we have to do the extra weekend work or evening work or whatever, but it shouldn't be an expected part of our role, that's likely to lead to better sleep. Now, some people say that, I'm sorry, I'm not doing that, or it's not part of this job, whatever. That's their point. That is their choice. But from a health and mental wellness point of view, they are likely to suffer the costs at some point.
Absolutely. Well, Giles, I'll just have one final question to end this conversation. And if you have to pick three tips for anyone who might be struggling to get a good night's sleep, what would be your three tips?
Yeah, I mean, as I think I said, I've probably said along the way, I think it's a very personal thing, sleep, and you will often find when I work with people in groups and also with individuals, you'll find different things that help more than others, depending on who you are, right? So it is quite difficult to generalize. However, because it's what people are interested in, and if I was in your shoes, I'd be asking the same question, Teh. I'll certainly do my best to give you three good suggestions. My first suggestion is definitely the one I mentioned earlier around a regular going to bed and waking up time. If you can introduce that rhythm into your world, as it were, you will benefit, no question, in terms of your sleep, because that's playing to the circadian rhythm, which is a key driver in, or the body clock, as it's sometimes known, all those little clocks inside you that are key drivers as to when you sleep. So keeping to some sort of rhythm must help, okay? That's the first one. The second one I would say is that some sort of, combined with that, is some sort of going to bed and getting up routine. I said in the book, I talk about bookending your night, but what I'm basically saying is have a wind down routine and have a wind up routine in the morning. And the more you have a wind up routine, which the wind down routine involving things like talking and reading and writing, enjoying a relaxing bath, chamomile tea, magnesium, avoiding bright screens and all that sort of stuff, all those sorts of things that just help you come down, as it were, from the day, has to help you sleep more. In my experience and the experience of many others. Equally, when you start the day, letting the day in. So if you've got to have an alarm clock, try and use a lot, one of these wake up, gradual letting the light in alarm clocks, for example, and getting some early morning daylight, meditating or relaxing or taking the dog out, just having some routine in the morning that is fairly gentle to ease you into the day, that will serve you. So you've got your regular rhythm, then you've got some sort of pattern of winding down and winding up, as it were. Those would be two things. And then the third thing I'd look at for many people is magnesium. It is known that we need magnesium to live at our best. It's very good for our, not just elements of our body, but also our ability to relax. It helps in that way. And we don't produce it naturally. We have to take it in. It's not something that the body generates, yet it needs. So experimenting with some magnesium powder or spray in the evening can often be very helpful. And certainly, if I think about people I've worked with on a one-to-one, that seems to have had a consistent benefit for many people in terms of them helping them just, as we said earlier, relax the body and quieten the mind.
Well, fascinating. Thank you very much for sharing those, Charles. I hope they will be helpful for anyone listening to us who might be having issues sleeping well. And thank you very much for the time spent with me today discussing your book and the contents in it. I would encourage our listeners to grab a copy and read more of your insights about sleep. But thank you for your time today.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.